If you had to pick the single most important thing about entrepreneurial success, what would you pick? It'd be a tough choice, right? But you immediately think of things like leadership, communication, delegation, time management, productivity, right? On today's show, we're going to talk about each of those elements of entrepreneurial success. My guest, Teresa Easler, has worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs over the last 25 years and has noticed some interesting patterns. Join us as we talk about the elements of entrepreneurial success, coming up next. If you follow this show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big believer in professional growth. I love personal and professional and organizational growth in myself and in my teams. I love learning new skills and developing leaders. And I've invested heavily in professional growth. I've gone to conferences and conventions and seminars. I've hired coaches and enrolled in courses. I've spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. But few people on the planet have had more to do with my professional growth than today's podcast guest. Teresa Easler is the president of Connect to the Core. This is an organization that helps companies all over the world in their communication, their marketing, their messaging, overall strategy. She's worked with A-list CEOs and their teams, helping them with executive presence and public speaking, as well as PR crises and major transitions. She's done amazing work in that space, but that's not how I know Teresa. I met Teresa through Strategic Coach, another organization that I speak about frequently on this show. Strategic Coach has been hugely influential to me. And for the first 6 or 7 years of my time with Strategic Coach, Teresa was my coach. She was my first coach and maybe the best coach, but don't tell the other coaches because they're all good too. So I would go once a quarter to Chicago, fly up there, spend the day with my cohort to be coached by Teresa Easler. And it was fantastic. I learned so much, not just the things that she scripted out, all the things that she was supposed to say, but also many asides and stories and illustrations, things that were maybe off script that were incredibly impactful to me. So I'm really delighted to have her as my guest today. Teresa, thanks for being with me today.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Teresa, I talked a little bit about Connect to the Core. That's what a lot of people know you as, but I know you an entirely different way through another organization that I've talked about a lot on this show, actually, Strategic Coach. So many of our listeners have read Dan Sullivan, maybe met Dan Sullivan. Strategic Coach has been really, really helpful to me. You've been an associate coach with Strategic Coach, I think, for almost 30 years now. Is that right?
Yeah, it's over 25, but I've been a participant for over 30 years.
What's that?
I've been a participant.
And you were, I think, one of the first associate coaches, correct?
Yeah, one of the early ones, yes.
So for the first 6 or 7 years, I think, of my time at Strategic Coach, Teresa was my coach. And I learned so, so much. It would be impossible to overstate all the things that I learned from you, not just the things on script that you were supposed to say, but the asides and the illustrations and all of the other things. So we'll talk about some of that later, but you've really been helpful to me in my entrepreneurial journey, and I'm excited to get to talk to you today. So lots of questions for you, lots of things I could ask about. But before I get into some of the things you've learned from entrepreneurs and some of your favorite topics, why don't you take a minute to tell our audience who you are? Tell us about Connect to the Core, what you do, and how you create value in the world.
One thing is, when you're talking about entrepreneurs, I was thinking about this, and I started working with entrepreneurs, coaching and advising and consulting with entrepreneurs. My first gig was in 1978, like a long time ago. And it has since then, I had a short stint in my career in the corporate world, and it became very evident to me that I am not well suited to work in a large corporate environment. So most of the work that I've done in my business has been with entrepreneurs. And I think part of it is because I'm an entrepreneur myself. I understand and what that mindset is, and that we're an unusual breed of people. We're not designed the same way as everybody else. And it can feel like a very lonely place for a lot of entrepreneurs, but it's, you know, knowing that there's, that there are other kindred spirits out there is pretty great. When I started as an entrepreneur, like many, it was like, I knew that I had some gift and that I had some insights that would be valuable, but I didn't really have a lot of form to it, but it kept moving in the area of communication. So since the beginning, as I began my career and as I started my first company and then my current company, Connect to the Core, it's always been focused on great communication. And whether that's as an organization, how you tell the world what it is that you do and let them and simply explain the value that you bring, that sweet spot of where you do your best work and who you do your best work for. So that part of it is what we work on. But the other part is the individual communication, being able to deliver your message in a compelling and an inspiring fashion, whether it's to your customers or your board of directors or, you know, the external market or internally. And we're finding that more and more of the work that we're doing with our clients now have to do with their internal communication. Leaders being able to motivate their team members to take the action that they want them to take, to actually implement the ideas and strategies, to be able to rally the troops with a focused direction. So we're finding our clients keep saying, you know, thank you for helping us with our external communication, but internally we're a mess. And our teams aren't as effective. Our leaders aren't developed as well as they need to be. So we're spending a lot more time with people in their internal communication now that I never would have anticipated.
Teresa, you talk about the mess that some people are in, especially internally. What is the value of communication? In other words, I feel like there are a lot of people, entrepreneurs especially, but business leaders of all kinds, that really have blind spots around this. They may not realize how poorly they are communicating, or may not realize how, maybe they know they're a poor communicator, but they don't understand the ramifications of that or the implications. How would you describe the value of clear communication?
I'll give you an example, and this came up yesterday with a client. So they have two leaders. So this is a second generation company, and it's a thriving company. It's very successful. And so the CEO of the company sees bigger opportunities. He cannot get to them until he has others who are taking a lot of the workload off of his shoulders, that delegation. And he has two particular people that would be the natural people for him to delegate a lot of his day-to-day activities to. The two of them do not get along. They are just like butting heads constantly. They have very different work styles. So one of them is very rigid. These are the rules. You follow it and you go this way. If you don't follow the rules, then you're in trouble. The other one is very amicable, a great people person. Really, everybody wants to work for him, except that he doesn't. You know, there things fray around the edges and it's a little ad hoc. And it, you know, so procedures are not followed and then there's messes to get cleaned up. So the one who's very rigid, nobody wants to work with. No, none of the team members want to work with him because he's very hard-nosed. The other guy everybody wants to work with, but he creates a whole series of messes there. So their communication, one with each other, is important. Their ability to get along with each other, to recognize that neither one of those approaches is the right. There's only one right way. My right way is the only right way. So the communication that they have with each other is an essential piece of it, because if they don't work together and if they're not communicating effectively to those teams, the company is going to stall out in its growth. It is not going to be able to produce better, higher revenue. It is not going to be able to execute on these bigger dreams and aspirations. And they're going to eventually, they're just going to stall out, and they're going to start having a lot more attrition. Their people will leave, and it will probably, they'll start losing revenue instead of growing in revenue. But that's an example of communication and what happens if it's not good.
So listening to that story, I think, well, first of all, maybe they need therapy more than they need coaching. Right. I don't know. But
there are people who have said that I'm their business therapist.
right, for sure. But seriously, a lot of people would look at that problem you just described and say, wow, they have an HR problem. They need to get rid of one of those people, or they need to, they would identify it or diagnose it as lots of different things, but not everybody would say that communication is what they need. So help us unpack that a little bit. Why do you say it's they need to learn to communicate better?
Well, because how they're going to get things done is through communication. Right now, they're not communicating. There is no communication. So does it show up as HR issues? Absolutely. Absolutely, it shows up as HR issues. But HR issues usually come down to what was the communication that led to the HR issue. Somebody was abrasive and wasn't supportive of another team member, and is consistently not willing to, you know, help out another team member. And it's like, you know what, if you want this, you got to get it to me this way and in this fashion, or you're on your own. I don't care. You know, it might be an HR issue, but it's a communication issue. It's a human interaction, people working together, having conversations, working through differences, and doing it through language instead of each going into their corners and going, until you change, I'm not doing anything, you know, fix yourself. And then when you do it my way, then we're good. That comes out in HR often.
I think a lot of business leaders would see a problem like that and want to, they'd be frustrated by it, but they just want to hide from it or ignore it or stick their head in the sand. Yeah. But I get the impression that you see problems like that and you say, oh, I know how to fix that, and run to them. Is that accurate?
Well, I would say, I mean, it's never up to me to fix it, but I can provide a framework and an understanding and an insight. If people do not want to change, they won't change. I can bring the best thinking and best approach in the whole world. But if somebody doesn't want to bring themselves to that situation and doesn't have any interest in resolving it and working together, I could be the most brilliant person in the world. It's not going to make any difference. But one of the things that happens at the leadership level is and internally, and where a lot of the communication goes sideways, is the person who is really the visionary, the person who is really running the show, who is driving the future of the company, they're often not clear about what their requests are from others. And they have great ideas, but they don't let others know in a clear, concise, easy to understand fashion, even though that might be completely clear in their own brains. They don't communicate it clearly to others. So others don't know what's expected of them, what they're accountable for, how they support it, and they're left spinning their wheels. This happens far more than I would like to see it happen. You know, and these are successful companies, but team members who say, I have no idea our direction. I have no idea where we're going. That's a communication issue.
For probably the first 5 or 6 years that I had employees, this was back, 15 years ago, I always did an annual, I should have done it more often than this, but back in the day, I did an annual review with these employees. And I had a self-assessment that was 5 or 6 questions that I found on the internet or something. And it was, score from 1 to 5, strongly agree, strongly disagree kind of thing. And it was things like, I'm paid adequately, and I work on a productive team, and those kinds of things. And I always, across the board, all of my employees, 5, 5, 5, 5. And then there was always one outlier that was a 1 or a 2 maybe. And it was so irritating to me. And it was always the same one. It was something like, I understand where the company's going and what my role is in it. And I'm a visionary, right? I eat, sleep, and dream vision. And I'm always thinking about where we're going. And I feel like I'm always talking about it. And it would make me so mad. I'm like, don't you people listen? I'm always talking about where we're going and how important you are to it, how we're going to get there as a team. Right. And after like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years of this where everybody, I finally decided, apparently the problem is with you, Tim. Like, it's not all them. And yeah. I started really working on that and started a series I called the State of the Company, where once a quarter yeah. I would really get, we'd take half a day. And anyway, that another story for another time. But I can relate to what you described. Like, yeah. you think you're being clear. You think you set clear expectations, even on a task level. And what yep. you get back is completely different from what you'd envision. And it's like, weren't you listening? Oh, maybe I wasn't communicating clearly.
Yeah. And yeah. truthfully, that is, I would say, the beginning of the cascading of communication issues that go through the company. That one thing. Mm. And
all starts at the top.
It all starts there.
Lack of clarity.
Lack of clarity, you know, who are we? Where are we going? What's our purpose? What, you know, what's the why of the organization? And those things inform so much. I mean, it is like you said about your team members. That's such a common thing. It's like, you know, they're busy. Then they'll work. They'll be good workers, but they're working at tasks, but they're not your partners in thinking. They're not really, they can't be engaged in the support of the future of the company. All they can do is be task oriented, and which takes you so far, but it doesn't lead you into a really, really fantastic future with the business. And it requires us as the leaders of our organization to get clear. So often we're working it out in our brains. It's not that clear yet for us because it's in, you know, it's a work in progress and it's happening between our ears. But as much as we don't convey what our thinking is and how we're thinking and when we're brainstorming and when we're, you know, this is a solid direction. And as I said, the why of the organization, here's what we're all about. Because that, you know, if we don't articulate that, that's that piece of it informs the culture of the company. So there's the vision of it, but all those other pieces determine what the culture is. And if you aren't deliberate about communicating what the culture is and walking the talk, it goes into default. And it usually goes into default into the worst behaviors in the organization, that those take precedence, and that becomes the culture of the organization. It could be a real backbiting, you know, everybody's in it for themselves. There's a lot of gossip or all of those kinds of the worst parts of our cultures that can happen if we're not deliberate about saying, this is who we are. This is where we're going. This is why it's important. You know, get on board, be inspired by it. And here's your role as part of it. To me, that's all communication.
Wasn't it Peter Drucker that said culture eats strategy for breakfast? And I think exactly. In my life, at least for a lot of my life, I really valued strategy and vision. Culture was always important, but I think I undervalued not just yeah. important philosophically and like ethically and morally, I want to have a good culture, but pragmatically, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And if you've got a rotten culture or even a weak culture, it's really going to affect your ability to grow and succeed. So I love it. Teresa, we could talk about communication. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't think any leaders say, you know what, I want to create this really messy, you know, nasty culture. Nobody does that. Instead, what we do, to your point, we don't put the attention on it. And so it just creates itself because there's an absence of intentionality or deliberation about it. It creates itself and it creates itself to the lowest common denominator. And that's why I think it's so important to be very, very intentional and very deliberate about it, very, very conscious of what it is that you're creating. And then it's a means of putting the adjustments in, because we all veer off course. And then all it is like, you're veering off course, come back on course. Are these behaviors aligned to this? Come back and get back on course with it. So
we could talk about communication all day. I know both of us value, you're a lot better at it than I am, but both of us value it quite a bit and owe some of our success, a lot of our success to it. But there are so many other things I want to talk to with you about. I know you've been with Coach, you said, as an associate coach for over 25 years. You've worked with, I guess, hundreds or maybe thousands of entrepreneurs in that organization, as well as Connect to the Core. I'm so curious to hear about patterns and observations. I'm going to save that for the end. But why don't you give us just a quick overview of what Strategic Coach is for the people that haven't heard about it? Maybe take a minute or two, and then I've got some specific topics I want to dive into about Strategic Coach.
Well, Strategic Coach is a program that has been designed specifically for successful entrepreneurs. So not people who are thinking about going into business, not people who are, you know, toying with the idea, but people who have already been entrepreneurs and have already reached a level of success. So that's one thing, is it's very, very targeted to that specific audience. The other thing about it is that it really looks at you as an entrepreneur from the standpoint of your freedoms. Like anybody who becomes an entrepreneur does it to expand their freedom of doing what they want with their time. So freedom of time. But the other thing is the freedom of how much money you can make. You're not restricted by what a corporate entity says. This is where your salary cap is. Then the other piece of it is the freedom of relationships, of being able to work with the people that you want to work with and not be obliged or obligated to work with somebody that isn't aligned with your own values or that you just flat out don't like. And then the last freedom is the freedom of purpose, of what's the bigger reason that and the bigger impact that you would like to have with your time on this planet. So really that's what Strategic Coach is designed around for entrepreneurs, to expand all of those freedoms in a very structured environment, structured yet very freewheeling and interactive kind of an environment.
Teresa, I've never had a real job, but I just listening to you talk, I literally haven't, but listening to you talk about that, I was just imagining the stereotypical corporate environment. Not a lot of freedom, not a lot of freedom of time, not a lot of freedom of purpose, of relationship, of money. All of those are hard ceilings or limits or boxes. And I know many of the people listening to this show have been entrepreneurs for a long time, and expanding those freedoms is one reason of many why we get up and do what we do. So I love it. So you've coached Strategic Coach for me and for most of us. We go once a quarter. So I fly to Chicago and spend a day with my cohort being coached by somebody. It used to be you for a long time. And then our group got split up for scheduling reasons or whatever. And so we haven't worked together for a little while, but those were always and continue to be a highlight of my quarter, probably my favorite day of the quarter in many, many situations. Yeah. Learn so much. Talk to me about one or two of your favorite concepts. You already mentioned the four freedoms, but what are some of the favorite things that you have to teach and employ yourself from Strategic Coach?
Well, I think there are a couple of bedrock concepts that are the essentials of Strategic Coach. One is called the entrepreneurial time system, and the ability to have distinction between different kinds of days is an essential piece of being able to focus on the next part, which is unique ability. Only doing those things that you love to do and that you have a unique capability of delivering value with. And, you know, each of those two bedrock concepts, form the basis of almost everything else that happens in code. Those are the two. I mean, as I said, I've been a client of Strategic Coach for over 30 years. So I still go every quarter to my own workshop with my coach and do the same thing where I'm there working on my own business, which is separate from when I go in and I'm the coach and I'm leading a cohort like you're in, of now I'm at the front of the room instead of my butts in the seats and I'm scribbling away and working on my own things. Those are the two things that everything comes back to for me. And then there are like a million different tools that I find really useful too. But those base concepts are the essentials to me.
So let me take a crack at the entrepreneurial time system. I'm sure you've taught it 1,000 times and I haven't. But for me, the simple sum up is you've got three types of days, either a free day, a focus day, or a buffer day. So a focus day is engaged in one of my three most productive activities where I'm doing the things that really move the needle for my company. And that's all I'm doing during that day. I'm really focused on important, high value work. A free day is sort of the exact opposite. I'm not thinking about work. I'm not reading business books. I'm not phoning the office. I'm not checking my email. I'm completely off the grid and I'm being rejuvenated and sort of restoring my energy and my creativity and all of that. And then a buffer day is getting ready for the other two types of days. It's when I'm doing the planning. It's when I'm doing some of the busy work that has to be done possibly. It's not high value, but it's necessary. It's getting ready for the other two types of days. Is that a decent capture?
Yes. Yep. That's a very good explanation of those.
So then that flows into your discussion of unique ability. The way I describe unique ability, of course, a term that comes from Strategic Coach, but I say it's at the intersection of skill and passion. And I know there's more to it than that, but it's what you love to do and it's what you're really good at. You've got increasing energy for it. You're always getting better and you could do it all day long. And if you can work in unique ability and you've got a whole team each working in their unique ability, you get this really cool effect where 2 + 2 = 5 or maybe 50. Right. And it's so cool because everybody's doing what they love to do and they're really good at it. And the effects are amazing. And so those two systems work together. You've got the entrepreneurial time system where you're getting a number of focus days in where you're working in your unique ability, not doing all the things you could do, but the things that you want to do that are really creating enormous value. And you're protecting that day to really focus on it. It's amazing both for your productivity as well as for your quality of life. So I see why you picked those two and have made great use of them.
Yeah.
I want to talk with you a little bit about the things that you've observed from working with all of these people. You've seen people that come in at the beginning of Strategic Coach, and in some cases like me are with it for, 10, 15, in some cases, you've got some clients that I think have been there as long as you have been. So What have you observed, especially about the ones that really take off and grow and succeed wildly and others that maybe wash out or just plod along? What's the difference between the really successful people and the moderately successful ones?
I think the biggest thing is being willing to take simple step after simple step after simple step to implement the changes in behavior and knowing that taking one simple step after another over and over and over and over again leads to exponential shifts. And we can get really stuck in wanting it to all happen now and not recognizing that kind of growth or that kind of outcome is not transactional. It's transformative. And so transactions are, in, done, out. Transformative takes a period of time because there's an integration that takes place of a change in the way you're thinking. So the first thing that happens is your thinking changes. And then that thinking change doesn't automatically lead to new results. The thinking changes the first step. Then that leads to changes in behavior. And the changes in behavior take longer. You know, we have different habits that we have to undo. We have new habits to implement. We have to communicate it to a lot of other people so that they can support us. So those behavioral changes take a little bit longer. And it's through the behavioral changes that the results change. But we oftentimes we can get stuck and go, well, I get it. How come it didn't happen? It's like, well, you missed that next step bit by bit by bit by bit. So I think that that's a big thing is that people want transactions rather than transformation.
I've got a great story for that. And I wanted to ask you about this anyway, because I'm so curious. If I've been curious about this for a decade, and here's my chance to ask you, Teresa. I wonder if you remember a comment that you made in one of my workshops. I don't think it was in the script. I think it was an aside that didn't mean anything to you, but man, it meant a lot to me. It changed my life. And I'm curious if you remember it. You were talking, I have no idea what the official agenda was that day, but you were talking about us as a group and you said something like this. You said, of course, any one of you in this room could leave your business behind, move to a different city, and figure out how to make a couple hundred thousand dollars. Like, that's not hard. Do you remember saying that?
Yeah, I say that. I have been known to say that often.
That floored me because at the time, you know, back then, the requirement for joining Coach was you had to have $100,000 in personal income. And I just barely squeaked by when I signed up for Coach. And at the time of that workshop, a couple years in, I was still barely squeaking by. I was not making a couple hundred thousand dollars. I was barely making $100,000. And you said that just so offhanded, like, well, of course you could leave this all behind and start something new. And it's not that hard. We all have these skills. And I thought, huh, I'm not making a couple hundred thousand dollars. And I've been working on this business for, at the time, 10 or 15 years. I started it in high school and I was working really, really hard. And I thought, do I really believe that? I mean, she acts like you weren't saying some big revolutionary comment. It was just so offhanded. And I thought, I think there's something wrong with my thinking. And so to your point, that day, my thinking started to change. And I thought, why is it that I've worked so long and so hard to get to this point? And up until then, it was like, this was my identity. I'd started it in high school and ultimately led to the sale of that business. And I sold it 4 years ago. And have never looked back. I've certainly worked with good people, and there are a lot of things I could say about the people that I miss. But as far as what I was doing and, frankly, the amount of money that I was making, I've never looked back and I've enjoyed so much more freedom and so much greater success. But it started with my thinking changing in that day in your workshop, and then that led to some behavioral changes, and it got the company ready for sale. And it did make some more money, but ultimately has unlocked a whole different level of success. And I owe a lot to you for that. So thank you for making that offhanded statement back in the day.
I'm so glad I did. And you know what? I stand by that too. I mean, to this day, I had a similar conversation with a client of mine, and he had come out of a big corporate environment and he was, you know, national sales leader and was going out and going to start his own thing and started his own practice of doing sales trainings and everything. And he was looking at some other things. And I do remember saying to him too, I said, you know what, making a couple $100,000 is really not hard to do. That's like, you can do that. It's, do you want to do something more than that? And he looked and he did the same thing. He was like, really? And I went, yeah, you know, you can do this. You have all the skills, all the tools to be able to do that. If you want to get beyond that, it's going to require a shift in thinking. And you've reached a plateau with your thinking that's going to stop you there. You've learned a lot. And that those skills are transferable. All of us entrepreneurs, everything that we have learned to be successful as an entrepreneur, these skills go with us. They aren't only with our businesses. They're ours. Those skills belong to us. So whatever that was, whether it was, you know, to that first level at $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 or whatever it is, you know, that skill level that you acquire, the mindset, the behaviors, the a lot of it's mindset, all of those things, what you know, like if I were to take you, and you did, you sold your business, you started something else, you didn't leave all of the things that you learned in the past, all the things that you learned that are necessary to grow a business, to assemble a team, to where to focus on, to all of those things, those don't go away. You get to keep that. So the next piece of it, it becomes easier and faster. That's one of the things. So one of the unspoken things about entrepreneurs is a lot of entrepreneurs go bankrupt. Or if they don't go bankrupt, they get really close to the edge of it. And that's right. Not uncommon. And entrepreneurial business is inherently risky. And when you get right up to the edge of it, or you go over the edge of it, and you actually have to file bankruptcy, you go through that experience, you learn a lot. And if you're smart, you learn a lot. And you take that learning in the next time, and you grow it faster. You don't make all of the same mistakes and all of the fumbles you did along the path. You already did that. You already went through those grades in school. You start at a different place.
That's one of my favorite quotes from Dan. I don't know if I'll get it exactly right, but he says every day is the first day of game two, and you only bring with you from game one whatever skills and relationships and mindsets and resources that are useful to you. But today is the first day of game two. And I love that. And what you said about, like, look, whether your past business or past job or past experiences were wild successes or terrible failures, nobody can take your skills and your experiences that you've learned, and you can just take those into whatever's next. And I love that attitude. Teresa, I want to go back to a unique ability for a minute. That's been really helpful to me to think about, what do I really do well? And how do I do more of that and less of all the stuff that I don't do very good? If there's somebody listening to this today that has never been acquainted with that, can you take a minute or two and kind of give them some direction? How would you start figuring out what your unique ability is, where you have energy and passion and skill, where you really create outsized value in the world? How does somebody figure out what that is and then lean into that?
Well, I find that the easiest access to that is identifying what it's not, because usually we're much more in touch with those things that irritate us or we don't like, or, you know, it's like when we're engaged in them, it's just like, ugh, like we have that kind of an emotional experience about that. So when you start removing those, and how you remove them is through delegation. You let someone, it doesn't mean those things don't have to be done. They have to be done. They just don't have to be done by you. So if you remove those, let somebody else who's better equipped to doing those things, it starts freeing you up to have some experiences that you can start noticing what you really enjoy. Most of the time, we aren't able to notice what we really love to do because we're so surrounded by the burden of what we don't like. This, by the way, this attention to what is it that I love to do, what is it I don't love to do, this is ongoing. This never stops. And I have two questions that I use for myself all the time. And the first question is, why am I doing this? So that determines, is the activity something that's worthy of not just me, but my company engaging in? Is this a good thing? Why am I doing this? Does this contribute something to the overall organization? Then the next question is, why am I doing this? Same words, different question. Why am I doing this? So first we've said, yes, this is an activity that's worthy to do. The second one is, am I the person to do this? Or is there someone else that can do this better, faster, more joyfully, with better results? And if I'm not the right person, then I make sure that I give it to somebody else. But those help really honing in on, am I engaged in the activities that cause me to be excited about my work? Am I doing the things that at the end of the day, it's like, why would I ever want to stop doing this?
Let me ask you a question about that and get really practical here for a second. You've probably forgotten what this was like because this you've been doing this for so long, but somebody is listening to us today and they're saying, that sounds amazing, but I have to do all of this stuff that I hate to do because nobody else can do it as well as I can. If I try to give it to somebody else, they're going to do a bad job. They're going to make mistakes. So what would you say to a person who says, yeah, that sounds great, but it's pie in the sky? Where do they go? What's their first step?
Well, so you know that communication thing that we were talking about before?
Yeah.
First of all, it's a fallacy to say, I'm the only one, nobody else is going to do it. That's ego stuff. Because mm-hmm. I promise you, there are a lot of people who do a lot of things that you're doing right now, and they do it way, way better than you do. And
for sure.
The world would be a better place if you let them do it.
For sure.
So that's one thing. But if, if you are a control freak entrepreneur, there are many, but if you're holding on to things really tightly, choose one thing that you would really love to have a release from and be clear about the outcome that you want. And that's the important thing is what does it look like when it's done well? And get clear about that and communicate that clearly. Now, you need to butt out at that point because other people are not going to do things the same way you do. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing. Because if it is not your unique ability, you're not doing a great job at it anyway. So somebody else who has a natural ability there, has a unique ability in it, is maybe not going to approach it in the same way. They might approach it in a better way. And if you're clear about the result that you want to produce, they're going to get there. And if they're not getting there, if they're not the right person, then you've given it to somebody else who's as incompetent as you are. That's not a winning formula. But when you give it to somebody that has that ability and starts and you allow them to actually do their job, you're going to get great results. But one of the mistakes is that we give something to somebody else. And when it's not done to our standards or how we think it should be done, or the process isn't followed the way you want it processed, whatever happens, then we take it back. And so what that does is it reinforces for somebody else's behaviors that, oh, if I don't know how to do this, or I don't want to do it or anything like that, I'll just go, oh, I don't know how to do this. And you're going to take it back. And now they've just delegated it, reverse delegation. They've just delegated it back. You.
So I heard three things there. One is we've got to become really effective communicators. We've got to get clear about the desired outcome and make sure that it's not just clear in our heads, but it's clear in somebody else's heads. And that's easier said than done, but it can be learned. So one is communicate clear expectations. Two is you've got to get comfortable with giving up control, because if this person actually is any good at it, they're probably going to do it differently than you. And that's okay. In fact, it's better. You shouldn't be making all these decisions. So quit being a micromanager. And three is make sure that you've got a great team of people that actually are better than you. And if people can't do anything better than you, then maybe you've got the wrong people on your team. Is that a fair sum up?
Yep. And again, team doesn't just include people who are on payroll. So team,
it's a great reminder,
Team can be people,
vendors,
that you bring in,
contractors, other,
all of those.
Good.
So that when you're looking at your team isn't only people who are on your payroll. Do you know one of the things I had a recent conversation? Dan Sullivan came into a workshop that I was leading, and he said, I mean, here more than 30 years later, he says things, and I just go, why did I never hear that before? It just hits me as something brand new that I never heard before. But the one thing he said on this particular day, he said, people talk about delegating down. He said, I don't want to delegate down. I want to delegate up. Anything I delegate, I'm delegating it up to somebody who's way better at whatever that is than I am. Delegating down, it has this, like, it's inferior. Mm-hmm. And if you think about delegation as you're constantly delegating up from where you are, that puts a different kind of context around it, a different way of thinking about your delegation.
I love it.
And removing those things that are not your unique ability, but they fall in somebody else's unique ability.
I love it. I remember about 20 years ago, I was starting to learn delegation. And I found the first few attempts were reasonably successful because I was delegating stuff that I knew I wasn't good at. Yeah. I was delegating computer programming, and I was delegating project management, and some of these things that I wasn't very good at. And so that wasn't too hard for me to let go. But I remember very clearly, years later, the first time that I sort of accidentally delegated something that I thought I was good at. And this was a major leveling up for me as a leader, because what happened was there was something that I always did. I always ran our strategic discovery sessions. We bring in a new client. I was the one that ran that meeting because I thought I was reasonably good at asking questions and, leading from the front of the room. And so, but I had a travel conflict come up where I had to be out of town on the day of the discovery. So I went to my newly hired director of strategic accounts, who I just hired. I was paying more for him than I'd ever paid for anybody before in my life, but he seemed like a good guy. But I was really nervous about giving him this big responsibility. And so I had a meeting with him, and my plan was to teach him how to run this thing. And so I had, it all figured out how I was going to teach this guy. But fortunately, before I opened my mouth, I said, all right, so talk to me about what you're thinking. Like, do you have a plan? Where should we start? And I was expecting him to say, no, I thought you had the plan, right? That's what I was expecting. But he didn't say that. He opened his mouth and out came this magnificent plan. I mean, this guy had named exercises and creativity and things that would engage the audience far better than I had ever thought of. And he just laid this out over the course of 15 or 20 minutes. And I just kind of sat there. And at the end, I said, that sounds perfect. You do that. And the meeting was over. And it was the first time that I'd ever delegated something that I thought was, I was actually good at. And it was a real, you talked about ego. I mean, that's all it was. I just assumed that I was the best person at that. I never really thought about it, but I assumed nobody could do it like I could. And I found out this guy was way better at this. So then I started thinking, I wonder what other things I think I'm good at that I could get rid of. And sure enough, there was a long list of stuff that once I found the right people and I gave clear expectations about what I wanted, shoot, I'm not actually good at that many things. There are other people that are better at so much.
I know.
And so my list, my job description kept shrinking, but it's all the stuff that I love to do that I genuinely am good at. It's so much better. So thanks to you and Strategic Coach for pointing me in that direction so many years ago.
I just recently had a similar experience like this, even all these years later. And it's been part of my vision for my company for a long time to have other coaches coach my programs. And so finally I just, I'm an overthinker. And so I finally said, I'm done overthinking this. I'm going to just do it. And I'll figure it out as I'm going. Usual entrepreneurial approach.
Right.
And
right.
So I started the hand-picked first cohort to coach on my presentation coaching programs called Encore. And in the session where they, their homework, their assignment in our session was that they were presenting an introduction to the program as if it was the first day of a new group that they were going to be leading and how they were going to introduce themselves and the group to the program. And I listened to each one of the people present their open. All of them were different. They were like significantly different in approaches. And at the end of it, I was moved to tears. I said, none of you did this the way I would do it. And I said, I'm so inspired by that because you took your own authentic voice. You took the framework that is there. You took the essence of it. You made it your own. And it was magnificent. And I learned something. I've been, you know, I created this and I learned something out of it. And that was, this was just even a few weeks ago. So
isn't that cool? Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It was like one of the high points ever in my career of watching what I had created and others be able to take it and really expand on it. It was like like I'm so moved by it. It's incredible. Yeah. So
that brings me back to what I said at the beginning about believing so much in professional development, not just for me and for you, but for our teams as well. And it's cool to see people grow and take on more responsibility. And it frees us up to do more of what we're particularly good at and want to do. And the more I can give away, that's better for them and it's better for me. It's better for our clients. It's better for our bottom line. It's a winning formula for sure. We're about out of time. I'm curious if you have any stories it does go fast. I'm curious if you have any stories back to the communication topic. You know, we talked about blind spots. So many people don't realize how valuable it is. Can you think of somebody that you've worked with in the past that maybe went from a poor communicator to a good communicator? And what was that transformation like? And how did it affect him or her?
Well, the immediate person who comes to mind is someone who's the president of a company now. But there was a transition that was taking place. A lot of our clients now, there are transitions that are happening from founder leaders into the next generation or somebody that they're grooming to take over and to run the company and grow the company. And in this particular case, is a young man who had been with a company from its inception. He was an operations guy. Like he made sure the trains ran on time, that everything was loaded up the way it was supposed to be. Like he was like, right, talk about down in the weeds. He was like way into the weeds, had his hands in everything, was an amazing operations guy. And he was tapped to be the president. So he had no experience of leading a company. And so all his communication, first his own thinking about himself is like he was in the trenches, and all of his communication was around tasks. So do this, make sure this, if you don't know how to do it, bring it to me. And so he was always like, he was an integral part of everything that was taking place. He is, you know, 2 years later, he is an extraordinary president. He is definitely not in the weeds. He is working on M&A issues. They are acquiring, they have multiple companies that they're acquiring. He doesn't have time to be able to do any of that. His communication has shifted from do this, do that, you know, hand it over to me, to going to the board and sharing what the vision is and how they're executing it and negotiating with other companies on acquiring their businesses. So it's become a very different type of communication, and it's required him to think very differently. And it took some time, just as some of the things that we're speaking about. It took some time for him to disengage from the operations and focus in a different area. The other thing that it changed from a different kind of communication basis is his availability, because he was always in the trenches. So his availability was, he was like one of the guys kind of thing, to a shift where he was the one who is directing the whole organization. And that he was not going to be accessible for a lot of people to come to is like, hey, would you call this person, or I'm having them, can you answer this question for me? He wasn't available in that regard, and he had to still be available. So it was a different kind of communication that he had to engage in. One of the other things we had to work on is he's naturally a more introverted guy. And he's not a blustery self-promoter at all. And some of it was being willing in settings like a boardroom setting or a group setting that he would speak up, because it would always be, you know, as some of my friends in Texas would say, the other guys who are all hat and no cattle that were taking up all of the verbal space. And he was the guy who was really knowledgeable and he wasn't saying anything. So we had to work on him getting outside of his own little bubble and actually sharing the wisdom. He was really, really had a lot to offer, but he was keeping it to himself. So we had to work on certain things to get him out there. Like one of the things that I made him do is, because he was always making notes in these boards, I said, one of the things you're going to make a note of, is you're going to put a little tick mark on your paper each time you speak up. And I said, when you go into that meeting, you have to speak up 10 times. And it can be as simple as, I agree with that opinion because of this. Or I said, it might be as simple as that. Or you've got a thought. Don't worry that you haven't stepped back, thought it all through, got it all ready, all of that. It's like you have to be out there so people become more visible with it. But there is all of those changes in his communication style, that enabled him to go from an operations guy into the president of the company that's working at a strategic level, not at a tactical level.
I had an occasion just last week, in fact, to be on a really big Zoom call. There were, I don't know, 30 people on this call. And there were people it was really an unusual call because there were people at all levels of the organization that were presenting. So the president and CEO was on this call. There were several like director levels. There were several more frontline people all presenting. And what I noticed, I've just not been in that setting very often. And it was so obvious that the communication skills just matched perfectly. The president was eloquent and clear and just masterful at communicating. The directors were pretty good. And the lower we got in the organization, it was such a stark contrast. It was almost embarrassing. Like, can't somebody teach this person how to actually speak and communicate a message? And I thought, wow, that is so instructive. There's a reason that she's president. I mean, no doubt she has other skills as well, leadership skills, but there are exceptions. But generally speaking, the higher you go in an organization, the better communicators you find. And I don't think that's by accident. So.
No, and it is one of the things, and we find this a lot, even at leaders of an organization, if they're feeling like their skills, like they've really got great skills, I will promise you that you go down a level or down two levels, they don't have those skills. They're not there.
Teresa, two last questions and we'll wrap it up. I want to find out where people can connect with you. So I'll save that for the end. But if you had one tip for an entrepreneur, an emerging business leader that wants to get better at communication, or one of the things we've talked about, what would be your takeaway for them from this session today?
Well, they should contact me.
Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, the first thing is if they've identified that they want to get better, that's the first step. And to really look at it from where do they feel confident and where do they not feel confident? And it requires an honest assessment there, because some of them might feel like they're getting pretty good results externally, but internally things are falling through the cracks or they have a lot of frustration. So get clear about where they're doing a good job and where they're struggling a little bit. And if they have something very complicated that they're trying to convey, something really a complicated message that they're trying to convey, that they may want to look at what might be another structure that simplifies some of the complexity. And that's something that we help people with all the time. That's most of our clients have complex things that they're trying to convey, and they don't know how to simplify it in a way that that does it. The internal piece is look and see where the hiccups are, where are things going off the rails. And I always give people the benefit of the doubt, that I assume that people want to do the best possible job. And that if we give them the support that they need in order to be able to do that, that they'll rise to the occasion. But if we don't support them, and we're going to continue to have things go off the rails, because everybody, like you said, that professional development, everybody needs that support. Most people don't get it, especially in entrepreneurial organizations. Corporations have all sorts of tools and support and education and training and all of that, but entrepreneurial organizations to a lesser degree. So be willing to make the investment in the knowledge transfer, not the training. Training's different. Training is like skills. Do this, do that, do this. You know, take the test. Do you know it? And then you forget it. But coaching and professional development is really about knowledge transfer and understanding something in a different way. So be willing to make those investments in yourself and in your team.
That's great advice. Teresa, if somebody wants to connect with you or connect to the core, where would they look?
The easiest place is on LinkedIn, and to reach out to me, Teresa Eastler, on LinkedIn, and send a message that way, or go on our website, Connect to the Core, or Teresa at Connect to the Core. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of. So reach out to me, follow us on social. We post constant little clips and tips and communication and leadership aspects that will help any organization get better and better.
Teresa, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, Tim, this has been a delight. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to today's Grow with Tim podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to show us some love by following us here and on our other social media platforms. You'll find all the links at growwithtim.com.